And with the oral history microphone, and we're visiting today in the home of Mr. and Mrs. Ben Haley. Right in the heart of Hardin, I suppose you'd say. Now, I can't claim that I'm just getting acquainted with Ben. I've known him for a long time. As a matter of fact, we went to school together. Ben, thank you for letting me come.
Thank you, Ray Mofield. Glad to have you.
Now, were you born in Hardin, Ben?
No, I was born at Alamo. Go out across the Dexter Bottoms to the old Ben B. Kay's farm. We were sharecroppers, and my parents lived on his farm. We were sharecroppers. I was born there. And Dr. Ben B. Kay's, you know, and Dr. Houston ran the old Murray Hospital. Well, Dr. Kay's delivered me. And my parents, I guess, had so many children, they couldn't think of a name. So Dr. Kay said, well, if y'all will let me name him Ben Kay's Haley, when he gets through high school, I don't have any children, never will. Well, I'll take him and put him through medical school, make a doctor out of him. But as it turned out, when I got in high school, Dr. Kay's died, to my sorrow. He was a fine doctor, and he thought the world of me, and every time we'd go to Murray, he'd give me a dollar. And back in those days, a dollar was equal to 10 now.
Oh, that's right, or 25 maybe.
Yeah.
Well, that's quite a story. Well, you have a little of the same background that I have. My parents were sharecroppers, and we moved a lot of different times. I was born near Olive, actually at the Barnett Cemetery spot. And then we lived in Callaway a lot, though. We lived many, many different places. Now, your father was?
John Wesley Haley.
And your mother?
My mother was Mary Elizabeth Crosby. She had her brother, John Crosby.
Mm-hmm.
They were brothers. I think they originally came from Tennessee.
Now, was that Mr. Crosby, the coal and ice
man? That's correct, yeah.
Oh, I really loved him because back we had no refrigerator, no electricity out in the country in those days, and I could come to Hardin, and where he'd chip ice, he'd let the kids. He was tolerant sort of fellow with the kids. He should have whipped us and got rid of us, I guess. But we'd pick up a piece of ice and suck on that. That was the greatest thing in August 1930 you ever tried.
People would buy a nickel's worth of ice to make iced tea. Every day they'd want a nickel's worth of ice for iced tea.
Mm-hmm.
And you was always chipping, you know, out of a 300-pound block, and kids would just follow the wagon around and pick up pieces.
Yeah. Right. Oh, that was fun. I can just taste it now. And, of course, Mr. Crosby had, his son John still lives here.
John's my first cousin, lives right across the street from me, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, so you were born in Alamo or in that area, and do you remember your grandparents on either side, either one?
No, Ray, I don't. I sure don't know much about them. I know where their grave markers are, but I just didn't know much about them. We left Alamo when I was about 4 years old. We moved to Dexter, you know, was going higher in life, seems like, going to a little bigger city. But even at that time, the IM store in Alamo was a large department store, you know.
Oh, it was.
Doing a tremendous business.
I remember going with my dad there one time, and he bought a true blue double shovel. And so it was a big store, like the two stores in Hardin. And they had a few farm implements and so on.
We moved to Dexter then, and my first school was at Brooksy Chapel. Lola Jones, Toy Jones's widow, was my first teacher at Brooksy Chapel. And I had to walk about a mile to school.
Well, that wasn't very far. There was a grade school about every 2 or 3 miles, it seemed like, out in the country then. So hardly anybody had to walk much over, maybe a couple of miles at the most, I think.
Of course, it's a one-room school, you know, and all the kids of all ages jammed in there, and it was fun.
It was. I don't see how the teacher managed this, do you?
I just wouldn't want to have been a teacher of that many kids, you know, all personalities and the fighting and scratching with the itch and wrestling and all that.
Sometimes we'd have head lice. I can remember that going around, and of course every year there was chicken pox and measles and everybody in school that hadn't had it did get it.
Well, then we moved to Dexter, back to Dexter, and we lived on a Gene Terry farm. You remember Mr. Gene Terry? He's a big tobacco buyer.
Certainly do.
Well, my dad was sharecropper for him, and we had a big crops, you know, tobacco and corn. And we lived there several years. And then finally, when I was 12 years old, we finally moved to Hardin. I suppose we was going up all the time, you know. We really got to Hardin. We thought, boy, we was in a big city.
Why, of course. You beat me here. I didn't come till I was 16. You remember we moved to the Dave Booker place.
I remember that.
And I started to school January, whatever the day was, second semester in 1938. We moved January the 1st, 38. And we were still working on the building had burned in February 37. And everybody was working to rebuild it. We were trying to get the gym open. I remember that. I remember my mother giving some hens to help pay for the gym or basketball uniforms or whatever.
Well, and I guess it was 38, I suppose, when the county built the new school. But they just didn't have enough money for the gymnasium. You remember they put up the walls, but they couldn't go with the floor. They didn't have the money. Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Hamilton Starks down here was a contractor, and we slacked our own lime, and our basketball team poured the footings onto that gym and put the floor down.
Yeah.
Free of charge. He just gave us exercise, you know. Mm-hmm. We just couldn't wait to get in a gym. We'd been playing basketball out on the ground, you know.
Yeah.
So we, the basketball team, poured the floors and put the floors down.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can remember, I don't remember the precise purpose for all, but of course it was to benefit school, but Buena Connor came by collecting, and if you didn't have any money, you gave some eggs or chickens.
That's right.
Or whatever. Mr. Grundy Holland was principal, I remember that.
I always remember Miss Eva Gardner. She was a tremendous community leader, you know, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember she got out and solicited chickens, you know, and bought our basketball team the first pair of high socks we ever had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I can remember. Who was on the basketball team that year of 37, 38? You were on it.
Well, it was...
Was Euclid Ross?
Euclid Ross was, yeah. And I can just see Euclid now come down between his knees, you know, and shoot that flip shot.
Yeah.
You jump center then, you know, every game.
Yeah.
I believe it was in 39, we went to Benton, and J. Matt Sparkman, you know, was a coach at Benton,
mm-hmm.
and they'd put a zone defense up there in that little bitty gym at Benton, and boy, you had a hard time getting to the goal.
Yeah.
Well, I remember, I believe it was in 39... We beat Benton 9-8. And when they came up here, then later on, we beat them 18-17. Back then, you jump center, you know, after every goal.
Sure, the games were slow
compared
to today because you had to take the ball to center and line up, face off, and so forth. Yeah, those were thrilling times. And we had. I think maybe NG and Harry Pace may have played. And, there was a boy named James Crosby, but not John's brother, your cousin. They came out of Olive.
That's right. He's at Reedland now, and he's working with a contractor on air conditioning. He put it in my daughter's trailer up here back last year. Met him first time I'd seen him in 20 years.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know what had ever happened to him.
He's at Reedland.
But we called him Bing Crosby to tell him from the other one.
Probably the tallest player that Hardin ever had.
I suppose. Yeah, he was.
I remember Bing was playing. We went to Paducah Tillman. And they were the only school that had a band, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that night down there, Bing, they was beating the drums and things had him scared so that he couldn't hit a goal at all.
And, of course, there was Tom Trimble and Jerry Trimble and Billy Irvin and George Allen Tucker, the John Elkins, and Jack Elkins.
I played with those boys. I played on the first team in 1940, but I didn't play in 41. I got too old for high school basketball. But anyway, I was manager. Mm-hmm. Me and another fella, and I remember one state tournament. And you know what happened up there? The Thompson boys had the measles, and John Padgett hurt his back. And so Herman Cole was one of their managers too. He was a teacher, but he and I were managers. So Tom's back was very painful, and we went down to the department store and bought a woman's corset and came up there that night, and we strapped that thing on Tom, and you know they have strings up and down the back, and like never got it on him, but he played that last game with that corset on.
Oh, you always wonder about the things that might have been, but I think everybody in the state was convinced that had Hardin been at its normal game, everybody healthy, that they would have easily won the state tournament. In fact, they only lost one game.
They came back and won the consolation game. I think they wound up third place
with
all the troubles they had.
I remember that well. They beat Henry Clay of Lexington in the consolation game.
That's correct.
For third place. And the only game they lost was to the champion, Inez, by 1 point. I remember that old coach over there, Russ Williamson, coach for 40 years at Inez, and of course he had a state champion that year. Well, let's get back. Where did you first go to school? You said you went to, was it east of Dexter?
Yeah, right up top of the hill there, Brooksie Chapel.
Yeah, Brooksie
Chapel. That was my first schooling, and then I went to Dexter about 2 years.
And then you came on.
Came to Hardin.
Hardin.
And I believe Miss Beatrice Jones was my first teacher at Hardin in the first old building, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, that was a beautiful brick building, and when it was finished in 1910, they, of course, organized and started a high school, which was the second one in the county after Benton. Benton opened in 1909 and Hardin in 1912 as a high school. So Hardin was one of the more noted education centers at that time. The odd thing in a way to me was that in all those years until the building burned in 37, it was an independent city school.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Well, at that time, Hardin was a real thriving community. There was sure lots going on in the city of Hardin.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mr. Dave Booker was chairman of the school board, and he was chief operating officer at the bank. They didn't have the title president back then. They called him cashier. They've changed the names over the years. Later they got to calling them executive vice president, and now generally they call him president. But back then, the fellow that was president was what we would call the chairman of the board of directors. And he was a civic-minded individual, too. His son, David, was always a funny one. And last summer, I remember, Ben, that you and I met him out in the middle of the street. And you were talking about the promotion that Hardin had when you were growing up for trade days, which was second Monday, and for Saturday. Would you tell us a little bit about what some of those promos were?
Well, back in those days, people would come from miles into Hardin to do their shopping and trading. And especially on second Monday was trade days, that there'd be hundreds and hundreds of people gather in here and trade dogs, knives, and horses, and just trade everything that was tradable. But I remember the Davenport, not Davenport either, that was the other store. The Pace store was a big department store, and they could get anything there from horse collars, you know, to flour and food and stuff. But anyway, Charles, one of the younger Pace boys, took a liking to me, and when I was only about 13 years old, even at Christmas, he'd dress up as Santa Claus, and he'd dress me up as little Santa Claus. And we'd promote the store, you know, there in the store, and maybe get out and go to homes and visit sick and shut-in people then. But anyway, he would promote Saturdays, and we'd have big crowds, and I can remember Charles would get a bunch of guineas, and he'd put messages on the guineas' legs, you know, and we'd get up on top of that big two-story building and pitch them off one at a time. And if you've never tried to catch a guinea, you don't know what it's like.
They'd sail a good long ways in the air.
Well, they'd fly 200 feet before they'd hit the ground. Mm-hmm. And we had kids chasing guineas all over Hardin. We'd pitch out 10, 15, you know, and the one that'd get them, bring them back, could collect a few groceries. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the day, say at 4 o'clock, the big thing, and everybody would stay for it, was to turn loose a greased pig. We'd try to get one of these Arkansas Ridge Runners, you know. You've seen those pigs. Their nose is about a foot long, and they're just slim and no fat on them. And you grease one of those things up, and he's hard to hold. Well, they chased that hog from one end of Hardin to the other, and I kind of believe Winston Starks caught him down on Jonathan Creek there, somewhere down in there, and drug him finally up to the store and won the prize. Then everyone would go home. He came up the street dragging that hog backwards, you know, had him by the back legs and dragging him.
Winston was a pretty sharp boy. He made an engineer with Philco Corporation. He lives in Philadelphia, or near there now.
He did.
Mm-hmm. He, of course, you know, you probably remember that he was wild about the technical aspects of radio.
I remember. Yeah.
And he had the first amateur station I ever saw. W9JIT Hardin.
I remember Winston, and yeah, he was a real smart boy. He had I remember his sister, Winna. She went to school with us. Yeah. I believe she's in my grade.
Well, very good. Now then, when you got to high school, who were some of the teachers?
Miss Blanche Booker, and of course Grundy Holland. And Mary Russell Cole.
Now, she married Herman Cole. Uh-huh.
Roberta Cox was one of the elementary teachers.
Yeah, she was good.
They were good teachers. They just dedicated to their students.
Mm-hmm. And now let's see, by the time, what year did Carl Johnston become basketball coach? I know he was coaching 41.
I believe he coached from 39 to about 42, I believe. I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, the 38 coach left the year after, well, he was there my first year at Hardin. William Wesley Chumler.
Oh, yeah, Chumler was my coach a while. Mm-hmm. He pulled me out of the game one night and told me I couldn't hit a hay wagon. I don't know what he meant by it, but he said, you couldn't hit a hay wagon. I'd miss some shots, wide open crib shot.
Yeah. Oh, well, we had our Marshall County expressions.
Well, you know, Sharp had the good team then, too, you know.
In 38.
Yeah.
They won the state championship.
Yes, they did. And Mousie Barrett was he was just a streak of lightning. He was real fast. And Chumler had always put me on him, you know. And by the half, I was pooped out. I just couldn't go no further.
Yeah. And, of course, they had the big king boy at center and one of the greatest forwards that ever played, Red Culp, Durwood Culp. And they had a Dunnigan and Barrett's. And
was it about 1939 when we had to go up to Greenville to play in the, it was changed it to Purchase Penarol that one year, didn't they?
They switched that off in the year 42 then, I believe. And well, they had changed it in 41.
Yeah.
Hardin was not the champion of the first region.
That's right.
Strange thing. They put them in the second region.
We went up there. I played. We went up there and played, I think, the final game. And I believe we beat Calvert City five times that one year, you know. Mm-hmm. Two regular season games in the final of the county, district, and regional tournaments.
I remember everyone was terribly angry. They said they were just getting rid of Marshall County out of the first region. If you remember, we'd played Alamo that year and beat them 67-7. And two of those points was made by John Padgett. John, just for meanness, took the ball, and they'd only made 5 points. And so he tore out down through there, and everybody was so confused. They tried to guard him, keep him from scoring. He scored 2 for Almo. John, of course, living in Frankfort now.
Yeah. Yeah, I see John about once a year. He comes down, usually comes see me.
Some of our good friends, though, like George Allen Tucker and Billy Irvin, are gone. Time marches on. Well, that would have been a great thing for Hardin if they could have won that year. But I suppose it was a great year anyway. Brewers came back in 47 and 48 and was runner-up 1 year and champion another. Well, Ben, you finished high school in the class of
41.
41. And what did you start doing then? Did you go into service?
When I got out of school, they had this National Youth Administration, you know, to train you for jobs. And a bunch of us kids went to Mayfield and took this training, and they sent us to Baltimore, Maryland. And we got a job at the Martin Aircraft Factory in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And we stayed up there about a couple of years, and the boys were all got our classifications 1A, you know, the draft, and so we knew where we're going. Mm-hmm. Well, we didn't want to go from up there, so we came back to Marshall County. I think I got home one day, and I notified my draft board at Benton the next day, and I got a call the next day. So
they didn't dally around.
I didn't get to stay at home long.
No. Now, what branch of service were you in?
I was in the Army Air Force.
Mm-hmm. And did they send you to?
We went to the Aleutian Islands. At that time, we were on Attu. That's about 1,800 miles out in the chain of islands from Alaska. And we were only about 500 miles from Tokyo. And we had planes. We were bombing the Creoles. That was right next door to Tokyo. Mm-hmm. And we bombed them for 2 years. And then when I got out of the service, I went to work. I got married and had...
Well, now, who did you marry?
I married Clint Skaggs' youngest daughter, Betty. Mm-hmm.
And of course, they lived at Hardin or Dexter, one
they,
of the...
They lived... They were a little bit ahead of us, I suppose. And they lived at Dexter, and then they came to Hardin.
Now, Martha Lee was... Well, she wasn't in my class, but we had... We went to school together. I think she graduated a year after I did. Mm-hmm. So I knew her. And Donald? Was it?
Donald's in Detroit. Mm-hmm. There was 2 boys and 3 girls.
And of course, Mariana, who married Billy Irvin, and both of those are deceased now.
Billy passed away when he was just 35 years old, with heart trouble. And of course, Mary then died with cancer.
Well, you know, they turned him down in World War II and said he had a heart problem. And I don't know if he ever thought much about it after that or not, but I mean, when it got him, it got him suddenly.
It sure did. We had 3 children. My oldest daughter is Lou Ann. She lives at Murray, works at Fisher Price. My youngest daughter, Rebecca Lynn, lives here at Hardin. She lives up here on the Irvin lot. You've noticed the trailer up there. Mm-hmm. My son's in Chicago. He's a minister. He's also working on his PhD at the University of Chicago. Mm-hmm. And he plans about a year from now to have his PhD and be through. Then he would like to teach in seminary. Mm-hmm. He's a studying under Dr. Martin Marty. He's famous, you know, one of the top 10 theologians in the country. And University of Chicago is where they invented the atomic bomb, right there.
Oh, that's right. They tested that on the squash courts at Amos Alonzo Stagg Stadium in 1942 with Enrico Fermi. I remember that real well. We didn't know exactly what it meant, I suppose, at the time. I read it, knew about it. Mm-hmm. But even so, when they dropped the bomb on... Alamogordo, New Mexico in 1945, wasn't it? Yeah, summer of 45. And then about a week later, Japan got a couple of them, and the war was over. Which, yeah, the University of Chicago was a great place and is a great place. They have One of the interesting things about it, they used to be in the Big Ten and had the champion football team. In fact, Amos Alonzo Stagg lived to be about 109, and he invented just about everything that was ever thought of in football. And he won an enormous amount of games. Bear Bryant finally broke his record, and now, of course, Eddie Robinson down at Grambling has just broken Bear Bryant's record. But a man from Kentucky came up there and became president at 29 in Chicago, Robert Maynard Hutchins. And he stopped football. So they had to find a replacement for Chicago in the Big Ten, and they picked Michigan State. Oh, I remember a lot of things along that line. Well, let's get back to you, though. After the war was over, what did you...
After the war was over, I worked for Brown Produce here at Hardin. I drove a truck. We hauled produce to Chicago and St. Louis and Arkansas and around. And then I got on to tapping. In January 1948, I went to work for tapping at Murray, and I worked there 33 years till they moved out. Well, I was ready for retirement that time anyway.
Did you have a bad accident over there, Ben?
Yes, I did. Just before I retired, one day I was unloading a truck of steel, this rolled steel, and I was stacking them up, and it had oil in it, and I just stacked them up there and put skids under them to hold it, you know. And I was walking by there, and one of those top rolls just fell right off on my foot, 8,000 pounds.
Oh.
Mashed half my foot off, three toes. And I had a pretty rough time there for a year. I had to have an operation on it, you know, and then skin grafts. And then I had a heart attack right off of that. So I've been on disability since 1980, February 80.
In one way of looking at it, I guess you were fortunate. You might have been killed very
That's
easily.
Correct. That's correct. Can you imagine standing up with 8,000 pounds on your foot and looking at the blood running out from under it? But anyway, they came, got it off, and got me up to the hospital and rushed me on to Paducah, and they fixed it up, and I can walk pretty good on it.
Yeah. Well, I see you getting around real well now, a big smile on your face and so on. So
I'm enjoying my retirement. I don't get out much, but I enjoy it.
Now, you were also my insurance man a while, weren't you?
I worked for the Woodman of the World Life Insurance 15 years. You know, moonlighting, they say, working at nights, and held two jobs. At one time, I had a child in elementary school and one in high school and one in college all the same time. And you can understand how much money it takes, and you've got to work two jobs.
Yeah, that's right. The fella has to do some scratching to get along. Now, what was your particular area of work at Tappan? They made ranges?
We made gas and electric ranges, yeah. Mm-hmm. We got up as high as 1,800 a day there at once.
It was a shame when that left. I was awfully sorry, and I'm glad to see that now that Briggs & Stratton has come in, and between that and Kennelake Foods, I think they just about occupied all
the building. That's correct, yeah.
The old building. But time changes everything, and there were other plants, I guess, that had a little more efficient production record. And when it comes to whether you lose money or don't, the company chooses the most efficient plant.
Well, you can understand a company stayed 30 years or 33 years at one place, and the employees would get a lot of seniority and a lot of age. Mm-hmm. And you know, a lot of times it pays them probably to move on, I guess, the way they look at it, so much retirement coming, pensions and things.
Yeah. Ben, we've got a couple of minutes left. Do you think of any unusual happenings or embarrassing moments or funny things that were highlights in your life that you'd like to get on?
Well, no. I've had a lot of enjoyable moments, Ray, and I've met a lot of famous people, like Vice President Alvin Barkley. I met him one night at All-Star Game in Paducah. Mm-hmm. He used my glove to throw out the first ball, and that was a pretty highlight. Mm-hmm. But I've enjoyed life, and I don't know of anything I'd change if I had to go over again. I was reading a story the other day about a little four-year-old boy, and his daddy was a minister. And he noticed every Sunday when the minister would go to preach that he'd have a moment of silence with his head over his hands up. And the little boy got home, he said, "Dad, why, before you preach, do you hold your head over and hold your hands up?" And he said, "Well, son, I'm asking God to give me something, in, you know, interesting to say." And he, and then he paused for a while, and he said, "Dad, why don't you ever say anything interesting?" So that's the way I hope we are today. I hope we say something interesting.
Well, I'm sure that your friends and people who remember the Davenport and the Pace stores of the 30s, 40s, along in there, will enjoy this reminiscence that you've given them today. I appreciate your letting me come. It's been a real joy to be with you.